Good morning, everyone. I'm going to ask that you continue to take your seats. And we are really lucky to have some seats up front, so feel free. I already know that this is a panel that wants to engage with the audience, so move up as close as possible. Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Wasn't that an unbelievable opening session? Just a phenomenal way to start the day. I am Liz Murphy, Senior Vice President at PICO. Come on. PICO has had the honor of being a 15-year sponsor of the Pennsylvania Conference for Women. And as the conference has grown, our participation has grown. And so here today, out of the thousands and thousands of attendees, we have 100 PICO representatives, both men and women, that are participating. So thank you so very much. So this is a panel about managing up, how to successfully work with any type of boss. It's making me a little nervous, but I'm going to feel good about it, I know. And I am really honored to introduce Mary Abajay. Mary is the president of the Career Stone Group. She has been the president and CEO for 12 years. It's a full-service organization for leadership development and delivers, leading edge talent for the folks she consults with in organizational development and career solutions. She's a sought-after author, and you'll be able to actually talk to her after this with her book signing. She's a speaker, consultant, and trainer. And I had the opportunity to spend a little bit of time online, both listening to her podcast and seeing some of her workshops. And what I really loved was her varied guidance and very practical guidance for your boss, your supervisor, and your colleagues. So please join me in welcoming Mary Abajay.
Thank you. Thank you, Liz. Hey, everybody. That was a really nice introduction. I feel like, I'll see you tomorrow. I'm out of here. All right. Who wants to learn about managing up? All right. So who wants to play and interact with us? So I am Mary Abajay, and with me today we have the amazing Amy Gallo and Lorenzo Clarity. I'm going to give them a proper introduction in a few minutes, but I just want to introduce them right now. Allison Green, Ask a Manager has food poisoning. I know, we're sad, so we're going to send her positive vibes. Everyone send her positive vibes to get better. All right, so before we start our panel, I thought we'd talk a little bit about managing up. Does that sound good? All right, so let me ask you a couple questions. Who in this room has a boss? Raise your hand. Really? You're not raising your hand? You don't have a boss, right? That's the first lesson. We all have bosses, right? Everyone has a boss. Even Elon Musk now has a boss. That's not himself, right? So we all have bosses. So managing up is something we have to do throughout our entire career. All right, in this room, who is a boss? Great. So while you listen to us talk in our little spiel here and think about managing up, I want you to think about it in two ways. I want you to think about it in how you need to manage up to your boss, right? Because it gets different and more difficult the higher up you go. But I also want you to think about how you're helping others manage up to you. How transparent are you being about works for you? How much are you working on trying to make that relationship effective for you, for your person, and for the organization? And that is what managing up is. It's not about sucking up. How many of you thought it was about sucking up? It's not. Unless you work for a narcissist. That's the only time where it works. Sycophants survive for narcissists. But other than that, it's not about sucking up. It's not about being a sycophant. It's not about being a bootlicker or a butt kisser. It's about taking a conscious effort to develop strong working relationships with people who are high above us in the food chain, right? People who have a little bit of influence over our career, who have different perspectives, different experiences, different personalities, different priorities, different preferences, and different pet peeves, right? And the reason this is important is because we work in a social system. The workplace is made up of relationships. Relationships that matter in a social system. For example, the relationships with your peers matter. The relationships with your colleagues, your team members matter. The relationships with the people that work for you matter. The relationships with your stakeholders, your customers, your clients, right? These are important relationships. And one of the most important relationships that matters for the workplace is that with your boss. Because your boss, whether we like it or not, has a lot of influence over your career trajectory. Your boss has a lot of influence on the types of projects that come your way. Your boss has a lot of influence on the types of teams you get to work on. And your boss has a lot of influence over your exposure in your organization and in your industry. So your boss matters. Your career matters too, maybe even more than your boss. And everyone in here needs to be responsible for their own career. Everyone in here needs to take charge and drive your career. How many of you want to drive your career? Right. And if driving your career, if one of the important elements of your career is your relationship with your boss, then it's your responsibility to at least try to make it work. Which brings me to the third reason why it's important. As much as we would love to, we can't change other people. Right? All we can do is change how we interact with other people. So if you have a boss that isn't perfect, you can either sit back and be like, woe's me, she sucks, woe's me, he sucks, and become a victim, or you can look at that boss and be like, huh, that's interesting behavior. I'm going to figure out how to make this work. So you become a career victor. Because managing up is about making the relationship work for you, for your boss, and for the organization. So what gets in our way, right? What gets in our way of doing this? Well, our egos get in the way, right? Our egos get in the way because we think your boss should. We think our boss needs to. And you know what? You're right. Your boss does need to be a better boss. Your boss does need to communicate more. Your boss does need to share more information. But guess what? They're not going to do it. And they're not going to do it not because they don't want to necessarily, but maybe they don't know how to. 75% of Americans say their boss is the most stressful part of their job. How many of you have had that experience in your life? Most stressful part of your job. So how do we make bosses in this country? Who gets put into bosshood? People who are good at their jobs. People who are technically good at their jobs. You're a good salesperson. I'm going to make you a manager, right? You're really good at writing code. I'm going to put you in charge of IT. You're really good at crunching numbers and adding things up. Guess what, head of accounting? Congratulations, right? That's how we make people managers. We raise them up based on technical skills, not on any sort of managerial aptitude. So that's the truth about bosses. And the majority of Americans, something like 57%, work for what we call small companies with fewer than 500 employees, which means those companies do not have training for their managers. So in your work life, you are going to have a whole spectrum of managers, right? You're going to have the good who has a boss that's wonderful, ideal, easy peasy lemon squeezy. You would do, Ray, stand up if you have the ideal boss. Stand up. Stand up. Let people see you. Stand up. You have a boss that you love. Easy. Fantastic. All right, just so you know, look around, because everybody hates you now. So you're going to have bosses in your life that are wonderful, easy peasy lemon squeezy. You get to walk into work and just be who you are, right? Then you're going to have, on the other spectrum, you're going to have, if you work long enough, you're going to have the boss that's the total living nightmare, right? The truly terrible, the psycho, crazy, tyrant, narcissist, bully, screamer, shouter, the toxic. Who's had one of those? How did you like that? Not good. So if you have the ideal boss, I call them the unicorn bosses, you don't have to do anything. You get to roll in and be you. You have this boss, the only thing you can do is get out. I'm serious, you should never work for a toxic boss. You need to put on a survivor mentality until you get out. They are not going to change. No one is going to save you. And chances are, unless you work for an organization with an HR department that has a history of actually taking care of the toxic bosses, they're not going anywhere. You have to get out. But somewhere in the middle, you're going to have a whole bunch of experiences, right? You're going to have from mild difficult to really difficult, right? And this is where the art of managing up is, because you're not going to know what kind of boss you have. And I'm not talking about doing things that are unethical. I'm talking about oftentimes it's just a change of preference, right? So here's how you do it. First of all, you take a look at who your boss is, really is, without judging. And you want to look at their preferences? How do they like to communicate? What's their personality? Are they introvert? Are they extrovert? Are they detail-oriented? Are they big picture? Do they like working in a team or do they like work independently? Do they stay in their office or do they walk around, right? Do they want to be kept in the loop or they just like, leave me alone, tell me when you're done. Here's $5, call me if you're in jail, right? You got to know what kind of boss they are. What are their priorities? What's she trying to accomplish in her career? What does he want to do for the team? Where does she want to go after this? You've got to look at their priorities. You've got to look at what they really care about. What does she really care about? What's his pet peeve? What's going to make them really happy with you? What's going to really annoy them, right? So you take a good look. Again, not judging. So once you have a good look about who your boss is, then you want to take a good look at who you really are, right? And that could be a little tricky. Because sometimes we like to think that we're somebody that we're not. So you got to take a good look at your end of that relationship. What are your preferences? What are your priorities? How do you interact? And once you have a good look about what each side is, that's when you get to choose. What can I do more of, less of, or differently to better align with my boss? Because that person's not changing. I can only change how I interact. One more thing before we turn over the panel. One of the things that gets in our way is we start judging people, right? So we walk through the world with intentions, right? We all have an intention. And our intentions drive our behavior. But we don't walk around the world with our intentions plastered on our faces, right? But so we walk around and we judge ourselves by our intentions. Well, I don't mean to micromanage you. I just need details. Like, I don't mean to do this, but that's what we judge ourselves. This is why micromanagers don't realize they're micromanagers, right? But what we do is we judge other people based on their behaviors, the impact that they have on us, the impact that their words have on us, how their actions make us feel, what their behaviors bring up in us. And when we are, and we see behaviors in others that we don't like, which, by the way, how many of you kind of like the way you operate? Yeah? Who likes the way they operate? Be honest, right? You, of course you do, or else you wouldn't do it, right? And who kind of wishes people would operate like they do a little bit more? Make life a little bit easier, right? Yeah. So, but we don't. We all operate differently, but we secretly love how we are. But when we see behaviors in others, like if Liz does something that annoys me, I'm going to fall prey to what's called the fundamental attribution error. So instead of being like, oh, that's an interesting choice of behavior, I go, oh, she's a terrible person, right? She's awful. We make it about their character. When I do behavior that I don't particularly approve of or may not be my cup of tea, even for myself, I don't blame myself. I blame the environment, right? Oops, it wasn't me. It was the circumstances. Let me show you how this works real fast. How many of you drive in a large city? Raise your hand. Or large-ish. Right, keep your hand up, drivers. How many of you have been cut off by a driver? What did you say about that driver? Maybe you call them a jerk, a jack, ass, or worse, right? We made it about their character. You're a bad person, right? All right, my drivers, how many of you have been driving in said city, raise your hand, and you cut somebody else off? What did you say about yourself? Oops. Sorry, I'm from D.C. I don't know nothing about driving in Philadelphia, right? We make it about the circumstances. So when you're trying to manage up, you want to make sure that you're not judging, right? You know how you feel, but you don't really know their intention. Amy and I were talking about this before we started, and I am convinced that most people, most managers do the best they can. It may not be very good, but it's the best they can. I don't think that many people are really out there trying to ruin your day or screw your career, right? I think most people do the best they can. And many people are unaware of their impact, right? And so while we can't align, we can't change other people, we can make sure our impact is aligned. I'm gonna show you one more thing and then we're gonna do the panelists. I'm gonna show you a very simple thing that you're gonna see all the time in the workplace. How many of you in my room are introverts? Great. Who are my extroverts? I'm not going to leave you guys out. All right. So I am, in real life, I'm an introvert, right? So that means my preferred way of walking through the world looks like this. I'm gonna walk through the hallway with my head down. I'm probably not gonna say hello. I might make a quick eye contact at you. If I am on the street, you see me on the street, and if I see you, I might cross the street. So I don't have to say hello, right, introverts, right? It's not because I don't like you, but it's because that's how I treat myself. Like, that's how what I like, right? That's me. And my intention is to not bother you, right? So if I walk by an introvert like this every day, the introvert might be like, oh, that's great, right? Phew, I don't have to talk to her, right? Am I right, introverts? Like, oh, that's great, just now you're on, right? Right? But who are my raging extroverts, right? If I walked by you like that every day, what would you think of me? What would the impact be? Not good. Eventually, you might get to know me. Right, so you'd make up a story about me. And I see this all the time, even something as simple as the introversion and extroversion, right? So what we want to do when we're managing up is we want to get past our story about that person and try to figure out what we can do more of, less of, or differently. Because your boss matters, your careers matter. I want you to be in choice so that you become career victors and not career victims. Got it? All right, you ready for the panelists? Yeah, baby. All right. So, first of all, I have to say, like, when they told me who my panelists were, I was like, oh my God, like, they're famous people. It was very exciting. Like, I'm a big fangirl of everyone on this panel. All right. So, let me start with Amy Gallo. You guys have heard, who's read Amy's stuff? You should all read Amy's stuff. She's amazing. So Amy Gallo, I want to read it because I want to make sure I get all your terrificness in. Amy Gallo is an expert in conflict, communication, and workplace dynamics. She's the author of the HBR, Harvard Business Review, Guide to Dealing with Conflict, and the co-author of the HBR Guide to Building Your Business Case. Pretty cool, right? She combines the latest management research with practical advice so she can deliver evidence-based ideas on how to improve relationships and excel at work. As a contributing editor at Harvard Business Review, she writes about a range of topics. Most of them focus on interpersonal dynamics, communication, influence, leadership, and building your career. She's the dude, man. Gallo is also on the faculty of the Emotional Intelligence and Coaching Certification Program, recently launched by Daniel Goleman, who is the author and the guru of emotional intelligence. That's really cool. I want to talk to you about that. Like, all right, so can we welcome Amy Gallo. And joining Amy is one that's not like the others, Sesame Street days, is Lorenzo Clarity. And I want to be honest, Lorenzo, I ran into some of your peeps last night at the reception, and I was like, what's Lorenzo like? Tell me a story where I can, you know, embarrass him, you know, as the only man. And they said, we don't really know because we work virtually with him. He's kind of like Charlie from Charlie's Angel, like this charming voice that comes out of this box, which I thought was fantastic because today you are again like Charlie's Angels. All right, Lorenzo Clarity is currently the head of inclusion and diversity for the U.S. at GlaxoSmithKline. His values include work ethic, faith, empathy, integrity, and purposeful living. He's also former military, by the way. He is proud of being raised by a single-parent mother who instilled in him the value of empathy. Clarity is also a credentialed executive coach and a GlaxoSmithKline Job Plus coach. He is passionate about developing and supporting others to unleash their full potential. He is a three-time Performance Circle winner and a GlaxoSmithKline Leadership in Excellence winner. Please welcome Lorenzo Clarity. I promised your company I would say GlaxoSmithKline as many times as I could in your intro.
Exactly. Got to.
Instead of the GSK. All right. So let me start, first of all, with Amy. I'm going to throw you an Allison question.
Oh,
all right. Cool. All right. So, you know, Allison's written and I've written, many people have written, I'm sure you have too, that in order to manage up people, that you need to look for things that are within your control, mm-hmm. right? And focus on what we can do and not what they can do. So can you talk about what that means and give some examples?
Sure. So first of all, I want to re-emphasize something you said. You cannot change another person. And I think that's incredibly important to remember with your boss. And oftentimes it's an incredibly challenging relationship because that person has a lot of control over your daily existence, what projects you get, what says in your review, when and whether you get to go on vacation, right? It feels a very unfair relationship, especially if you don't have a good boss. So instead of focusing on the immense power that this person has over you, you need to focus on things you can control. And that is, specifically your reaction to this person's behavior. So you can't change your micromanaging boss. You can't change that they're passive aggressive or that they fail to give you credit every time that you are involved in a project and they present on it. But you can change how you react to that. So that might mean that you ask for things that you aren't getting. So let's take the credit stealing example. You might make a suggestion. What do you think if we included a slide that listed everyone who worked on this project so that we're sharing credit equally? Right? And you make it about the group, not just about you. So you can make a request like that, and it may not change the fact that the person is power hungry or trying to take credit for the team's work, but you could actually change the specific behavior. You also might need to do a little bit of emotional detachment. For those toxic bosses, when you're in survival mode, as Mary referred to, you might need to think about, how do I survive, get through every day without letting this person get to me? There is nothing worse than the ride home where you're having the argument with your boss about something, or your friends are just sick of hearing about your toxic boss. So you have to think about, what can I do to get myself out from under this negative dynamic that I have going on? And one of the best things, when I have to deal with a toxic person, one of the most helpful things is to tell myself, that person's punishment is having to be themselves every day.
I love it.
Right. Like, that I don't have to suffer, they have to suffer, because I get to be me. And I'm proud of the values I'm living and the actions I take. And that person is not. And that they have to deal with the consequences of that. And that may be, they may be rewarded in your organization. They may be seen to climb in the organization. But I can guarantee if they are a toxic person, they are not a happy person. And that's their punishment. So focus on what you, the values you care about, and living those values. And focus, again, on what you can control. Can I make choices, or can I make requests that change the dynamic a little bit? Again, you're not going to change the person, but can I change the dynamic a little bit?
Great. I love that. It's such great advice. I love that. Lorenzo, you're up. Are you ready? All right. So you are a corporate guy, right? You've military, corporate. You've gone all through GlaxoSmithKline. You've had a lot of bosses, I'm assuming. You've also been the boss many times. So can you provide a specific example of when managing up has served you well, and how it looks differently as you climb the ladder, and what you learned from that experience?
Yeah, so definitely. So thank you, and a lot of energy here with Mary. So Mary, you covered a lot of stuff that I was gonna cover. I almost feel like I need to stand up.
Go for it, baby.
No. So I have about four or five of them, but I'm gonna go with one. And the most recent one, which really is the reason why I'm in the role that I'm in now. So just quickly, the majority of my career at GSK has been in the commercial sales business, where I was a people leader, right? So I kind of grew up as a salesperson, carrying a bag, calling on doctors, and I've matriculated up. So the majority of my career has been in the commercial sales, and then the last 2.5 years have really been in our HR function, and really been a great move. One of the things that I had to learn early on was the distinct difference between working hard and working smart, right? And I'm gonna weave in some cultural insights also as to why that's important. So as an African-American male, right, and I don't wanna speak for all African-Americans, one of the things in which I was always told as a kid is, hey, you work hard, right? And you will work 3 times harder and things will happen for you. And you get to a point where that doesn't always work. Right? So you have to get to a point where you say, okay, I'm working hard, but I also need to work smart. And my smartness came from really recognizing that as an introvert, I needed to work outside of my preference and to begin to work as an extrovert to develop different relationships. And so my strategy was around creating my own compass. And the compass was establishing my north, establishing my south, establishing my east and west. And so my east and west were always my peers. So whatever jobs I had, I really wanted to make sure that my relationships across left and right were always pretty solid. And then the people in which I've led, so that's my south, I always wanted to make sure that I had the respect there, but I also had the strong relationships. But my opportunity was around the north. And the north were the people that were two to three levels above wherever I was in the organization. And one of the things that I tasked myself of doing was establishing my first person within that North and really helping, having them to help me to establish my brand in the organization. How do I manage the narrative? How do I begin to shop my work and not feel like I'm kissing someone's butt? How do I be more intentional with my interactions versus saying that I'm getting on people's calendars, but I don't really have a purpose for which I'm talking. So that all happened. And so we went through a reorg and a reorganization. And the role in which I was in, I was about to lose it. Well, I'd end up losing their role. So I had to go out and find my own job in the organization. And the alternative would have been just taking a severance package and leaving. But I did a pretty good job over the years of establishing the North, East, South, South, and West. And the first thing that I did versus looking like the victim and saying, wow, we're going through another reorg. I don't see why this is happening. I've done this, this, and that. I went to the North and I started talking about the developmental opportunities in which I was looking for. What was critical is that these are people who knew my brand and they also knew my story. So there was not a lot of selling that I had to do, which is one of the critical success factors of when you build these relationships, keep going back and investing in the relationship. Don't just use it whenever you need it. It's like praying. Don't just pray whenever you have a difficult situation. Always, always pray. So these two individuals that were in my North, I had a conversation with, and I was able to say, listen, this is the scenario in which I'm in. Here is what I'm open to. This is the track that I've always been on, but here are the things that I'm open to. Your visibility in the organization is so much broader than mine. If there's something that you see that matches my skill sets, that matches my journey that I want to continue to take my career on, I'm open to it. I don't want to just give you one specific job. I'm open. And to make a longer story short, these two individuals, one of them is my boss now, came back and said, hey, there's two opportunities, and I want to see if you're open to them. And one of them was better than the other. Obviously, it's the role of which I'm in now. But I don't think it would have happened if it were not for those initial investing of time, establishing the North, and really being purposeful with how I manage the narrative and manage my brand in the organization.
I love that.
Yeah, I just want to, what I really like about what you're talking about is that we see other people managing up, which is really just kissing up, right? We see the people who look for the bosses, you know, flatter them in the meetings, always repeat their ideas, and we think, oh, I don't want to manage up like that. But this is what really managing up is. It's about knowing who in the organization has the ability to help you, and not establishing relationships so that they help you, but establishing relationships so that you can make good choices together about your career.
And that's really, when we think about managing up, it's about managing relationships, right? Not about being a sycophant. I love that. And I love your story had such a nice long view. Like, so don't just, like you said, don't network when you need a job. Like, don't do that just when you need it. I love it. All right, you ready for a tough one?
Yeah. By the way, I love that we're all introverts.
I know. How do you like that? See, who are all the introverts? Yeah. You too someday can be on stage. Right.
And I also was raised by a single mom. I have to say, are there any single moms in the audience? All right, can we just like give them a round of applause? It's a hard job.
All right, Amy, I got a tough one for you.
Okay.
I get asked this one all the time, and you're the conflict expert, so I'm dying to hear what you have to say. Let's say I've had a disagreement, or maybe an all-out fight with my boss. Maybe I said a few things I shouldn't have. How do I get the relationship back on track?
This is something I get asked all the time, which is, I have a horrible relationship with my boss. How do I make it better? And it might be that you've had a disagreement. It might be that you did something, you made a mistake. There are a lot of reasons your relationship might not be great. And your instinct might be to, you know, be the sycophant, right? I'm just going to flatter this person. I'm going to get back in their good graces.
Because that's easy. That's the easy way.
Right. And we're taught, you know, when things aren't going well, try to make things better. But in the workplace, especially if your boss is not feeling great toward you, going to your boss and say, you know, really appearing as if you just want things to be better is not the best way. You actually want to get back into the swing of work together. So find a project that you can work directly with your boss on. Volunteer to help them with a presentation they're writing or with a project, a really important project, and say, I want to help with that. Focus on the work.
So put the relationship to the side for a minute and go on task.
Okay. Exactly. And certainly, if you made a mistake, apologize, right? If you said something you regret, say so. But really, repairing a relationship is not about that initial conversation. It's about getting back into the rhythm and showing them that you're invested in the team, the success of the team, and the success of the organization, and most importantly, in their success. And I think this is something to keep in mind about managing up. You not only need to know what your boss cares about and what their preferences are, but you have to think about what would make them look good. And this isn't about being a sycophant. This is a strategic move, because usually, as a boss rises in an organization, you rise along with that person. So you have to look for ways that you can make your boss shine. And then that will, don't hide your light under a bushel, right? You still want to make sure that you're getting credit for the work you're doing, but make choices that help your boss succeed.
I love that.
Can I add to that? So that's a perfect one. One of the other pieces of advice that I've gotten from someone in the North was around making sure that your development or the projects in which you take are organizationally significant. Many times we want to feel valued, right? And we'll take any old thing, like, you know, assign me as the head of this or assign me as this and that. And the thing that I've tried to always do is to really make sure that I was attached to something that was organizationally significant, that was on the radar of my boss, which was on the radar of his and her or her boss. And that also makes the conflict resolution even easier, right? So if I already know that I'm working for Amy and she's accountable for something very big in the organization and she's giving me a piece of it, and I've turned my ankle, right? So I have made a misstep. I can go to Amy very easy because I already know that it's important to her. It's definitely something that's critical to me. And something that I always do is say, Amy, can you help me to understand? Can you help me to understand what you felt that I did that I should do differently? Amy is going to lean into that quickly because it's important to her, because she's accountable. It's important to her also because I am not blaming her. I'm putting it back on me. And one of the things I always say is, can you help me to understand?
Yeah. That was actually going to be my next question to you. How do you get developmental feedback? So I think do you want to add anything to that for developmental feedback?
Yeah. Did you?
Well, I want to actually, say something about the organizationally important. I think this is especially important for women because there's lots of research that shows that women get asked to do what we call office housework. So, and it's everything from like ordering lunch to, you know, organizing someone's birthday party to more significant things like scheduling the meeting, right? Things that take a lot of time but that are not organizationally significant. So you need to constantly ask yourself, is the work that I'm doing important to the organization? And that's a conversation you want to have with your boss. And as Lorenzo said, you want to say, I care about the organization, I care about the team, what would help that, what can I do that will help us reach our goals? And make sure that you are doing things that are high quality, high value for the organization.
And I want to add one more thing to that. How many of you go to meetings? How many of you, when the meetings are so full, you take a perimeter seat and give someone else a seat at the table? Right? Don't do that. That makes you organizationally insignificant. I know it's nice. We want to you take my seat. Go ahead, I'm fine. Never give your seat at the table, literally, if you don't have to. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
So to add on to it, so the counter that some of you ladies and gentlemen may be thinking is, well, how do I defend myself when I'm told no? So I'm asking for the big project, or I'm asking to be more relevant, but there's always an excuse. What if I'm with a boss that has favorites, right? And he or she is really minimizing my stuff, and she's giving me kind of the scraps, or he's giving me the scraps. So A couple things that I've seen done, and I coach people on is, when you are defending why you're asking for something, link it back to your development, right? So the reason why I'm asking for this, for instance, is because I want to enhance my enterprise ability to drive change. I have done well driving change on maybe a very local level. But now I want to show that I could drive change on a more broader level. So that's the reason why. You know, I actually want to enhance my coaching skills. And as you and I know, part of my development has really been to really broaden my coaching skills. That's the reason why. I'm trying to become a better project manager. This opportunity is going to cut across 5,000 people, and it's going to be a huge project. Oftentimes, you have to help people see the things that they're not seeing, because all of us are operating at pace, right? And, you know, as much as we want to care about every single thing about the people that we work with and we work for, we just don't. So I oftentimes say we have to be our own brand manager. And oftentimes that is letting people know, hey, you know, remember this discussion that we had? This is why I'm asking. I didn't really make that connection. Yeah. So we have to have the courage to have that discussion to be able to really drive some of the decisions that we want made.
Yeah, and one of the things that Lorenz was getting at is that people are really not very good at this. It's learning how to make an effective request of your manager, right? An effective request has three parts. Why you want it. Well, first of all, what it looks like, being very specific. I want to take this class. I want this project. What it looks like. Why you need it, the benefit to you, because I want to do this. And don't forget the benefit to the organization and to the boss, right? You got to speak the language of results. So if I do this, it will help me grow in my career, but it's also going to help you, boss lady, and the team and the organization. All right, we have time for, I think, one more question. All right, so before we open it up to you guys. All right, so this is the big question I get all the time. So I can't wait to get Amy Gallo's perspective and Lorenzo's. How do I give feedback to my boss? Mm. How many of you are wondering that? How do you give feedback upwards? I always say carefully, but I want to see what Amy says.
Yeah. Carefully is right, and maybe not at all is also. I do believe that most bosses want feedback. Most bosses. You do need to think very carefully about the type of boss you have, whether they've demonstrated that they're open to feedback, whether they've retaliated against other people who have given them feedback, and what your relationship is like. If you have a trusting, open relationship with your boss, by all means, you can wade into those waters carefully, as Mary said, and see how it goes. But most people, remember, people who are higher up in the organization have a very hard time getting the unvarnished truth from people below them. So if you become one of those people who's very direct and open and invested in your boss's success, then they're going to turn to you. They're going to have a much stronger relationship with you, and be open to your feedback. A couple practical things I would say. One, watch how your boss reacts to feedback from other people before you decide to do it yourself. It might be a peer, someone else that person manages. It might be someone above them. What happens when they get feedback from their boss? How do they react? And use that as clues as to whether it's a safe situation for you to give feedback. The other real practical thing is, because a boss is often in giving feedback mode, you have to help them switch their mindset. So you might say to the boss, I have a difference of opinion about this project that we're discussing. Would you mind if I shared that? Right? And most bosses won't say no, right? They'll say, yeah, go ahead. But it helps them shift their mindset. Or, I saw something that happened in that presentation that I'd love, just share my observations. Is now a good time? Right? And that also not only helps them shift the mindset, but helps them buy in. They've gone ahead and said yes, so they're going to be much more receptive mentally and emotionally to hearing what you have to say. And always frame it as wanting to help them. If you're sitting there going, I finally get to tell my boss what a jerk he is, right? Your boss, right? Your boss is going to be like, wow, she's telling me what a jerk I am, right? That's a very
not a good move for career success.
Not a good move. You want to have your intentions in check and make sure you're actually trying to help the boss or help the team, because that's going to come through in the feedback.
All right, now I have a question for you guys. I'm going to count to three. And I want you to yell out the worst boss trait that you have. And we're going to address that one first, all right? So I'm going to count to three. The worst boss trait, the thing that bosses do that you hate the most. Ready? Oh, hold on. 1, 2, 3. Micromanager is always the worst trait, right? So should we talk about that one first, Liz? Okay, so Liz can ask. So let's talk about what a micromanager is. A micromanager is someone who's always over your shoulder, right? Telling you what to do, not giving you any free rein, right? On you. And micromanagers, they do it for lots of reasons. But the thing you need to know about a micromanager is that they need some more extra level of inclusion, information, or control, right, that you're not giving them. And my thing about micromanagers is don't take it personally, first of all. It's who they are. Unless you're the only one being micromanaged, then I suggest you take it very personally because you're not giving them something you need. So my advice is find out what they need and be proactive about giving it to them. They're not going to let go of the reins until they trust you're going to do it their way. That's my first thing. What would you add to that?
Yeah.
So I would,
have you had one before?
Many of them.
tell us what worked for you.
So one of the things that I think that you both said that's very important is for yourself, and that's to have good EI, right? Yeah. So you have to understand and have an ability to have good self-regulation so that you're managing yourself, you have an awareness as to what you're seeing. Some of the things that I've seen done and I've also done is to...
What have you done? Tell us your success stories.
So some of the things that I have done is really call out. So, like, you know, I actually do a lot of just watching the behaviors of the leaders in which I have, right? So you kind of know the people who like their messages, you know, returned quickly. You kind of know people who like, you know, dates on things, the accountability things, just buttoned up tight. And as it was said earlier, you really can't control them. You only can control yourself. So something that I always do is I really make sure that I can be able to adjust on a dime. So if I have a micromanaging boss, I don't have no problem, shifting and adjusting my style to meet his or her style, right? If I have a very loose boss, meaning someone that's, you know, not pressure prompted, someone that gives you that space, I also can operate within that because I still maintain my own structure. So I guess my critical success factor is always keeping making sure that myself, that I'm in the middle, that I can actually go to the right easily, and I can go to the left easy.
You're adaptable and flexible.
Right. Where I've seen people kind of fail is when they have an apprehension or a resistance to changing themselves to accommodate their boss. The boss is not going to change. So oftentimes you have to change. And so the question is, are we doing the work to evolve ourselves to be able to be adaptable in those situations?
And by the way, being adaptable and flexible is what you want to be when you are the boss, right? Don't we all have a boss that's going to adapt to us, that's going to find us valuable, value us, value the way we do things? So if you can learn to do it upwards, by the time you get to be a boss, you've already developed those adaptive relationship skills that are going to make you the unicorn boss that everybody loves.
So thank you. This is one of the most important times of each session, and we get to open it up for questions. But first, let's say thank you to our panelists, to Lorenzo, to Amy, and to Mary.
Thank you, guys.
Microphones toward the front in each aisle. Come on up. We've got the experts. We've already heard a lot of practical guidance for us today. I've learned a lot. I'm really excited to go back to my workplace. Start over here. Thanks.
Hi. I want to say thank you. This is really enjoyable. I think you guys have all given really good information. So I'm in a development program at work, and I'm now reporting into a new sector with different levels of management, much higher than I'm used to. So what is your suggestion on building relationships quickly? I'm in a rotation program. It only lasts for 2 years.
So one of the things I would first say is to go to the boss that you're working with and ask for a mentor, someone that's been in that department. Ask for someone that's just recently been in it, started working, or someone that's been in there for at least like a year or two. And those mentors can help to guide you and answer some of the questions that you may have as you mature in that role.
I think also paying attention to those people, seeing what they care about, what they're interested in. It doesn't ever hurt to send an email to someone with an article that that made you think of them. You know, just to sort of start saying, I'm thinking about you and what matters to you, shows that you're interested in establishing a relationship. And just asking questions. I think people love to talk about themselves, their experiences. Ask them, hey, when you were in my position, what were you most excited about? Or, you know, what have you learned that I can learn from?
Great. Go have coffee and ask those questions. I totally agree. We all like to talk about ourselves. Everybody does.
Great. We'll go to the middle. Thank you.
So can you help give us some insight on how to know when you definitely have a toxic boss? Do you know when you're not giving up, you're moving on? How do you know where that line is?
So I'm going to take this one.
Sure.
Because I just had an article published in HBR on this. So here's the thing. So there is, actually, if you get my book, there's actually a thing to fill it. So quick answer short, when you find you are worrying more about your boss and your dealings than your work, it may be a sign. When you feel like going to work is like going to prison, when you have that emotional, when you are in the parking lot every day before work and you're calling someone different on the phone crying in order to help you to get in, right? When you start being physically sick, emotionally sick, and psychologically sick, when your people tell you, why are you still working there? It's time. And, you know, toxic bosses are actually very serious things. It can take up to 24 months to recover from a toxic boss emotionally, physically, and psychologically. And people who work for toxic bosses longer, because toxic bosses are often found in what we call high-meaning careers, high-meaning fields. And so you'll stay, and we stay because we're hopeful that they'll change. We're hopeful that the organization will do something. We stay because we've invested. It's the whole economic fallacy. I've given too much time in here to leave now, right? Or if I leave, they win. All of that is ridiculous. A toxic boss will kill you. 67% more chance of heart attacks. Leave.
Great, thanks. Quit. We're going to go to the... Thank you. I've got a stomach ache right now.
I feel very strongly. I feel very strongly about toxic bosses.
Thank you all for being here. I'm a manager for the first time. I'm managing a boss.
Wait, congratulations and condolences.
Thank you. How do I manage helping them to manage up without losing the social aspect of the workplace and having clear boundaries?
I think that's one of the most important questions you can ask yourself, right? So there's two kinds of managers I've found. One is the manager that says, I don't want my people managing up to me. The other kind of manager is like, give me the article, give me the book, let me highlight it and give it to my boss. So I'll give my people so they know.
Yeah.
You sit down, you have a conversation with your team. You can use a personality profile, you can use anything. But you literally ask, what are your preferences? Here are mine. What are your priorities? Here's how I like to work. Here are my pet peeves. What are yours? You try to make the way you work as transparent as possible, being honest with you. And then you reach out and you ask them what works for them. And you just be, I think, transparent. You have the conversation. And when you first see something that rubs you the wrong way, you call Amy Gallo and she'll tell you how to get feedback. That's what I would say.
Something else I would say from my own experience is to have an engagement plan, right? So, you know, there are going to be those constant calls where it's all about the performance. It's coaching. It's coaching them on their, on their behaviors and so on. Something that I've always done is really been very purposeful with my touch points on a weekly and monthly basis. That's totally outside.
Which is challenging for an introvert.
Business, yeah. Right? But I actually, no, it's even easier for an introvert because then you're very purposeful. So you're already able to calibrate, right? And in these, it's totally about that individual, their whole self, right? So the communication style, asking specific questions such as, what's your preferred way to work? What are some of the things that kind of bring you stress at work? You know, in your previous roles, tell me some of the best bosses that you've had. You know, how did you spend time with him or her? When things didn't go well, how was that handled? Tell me some of the things that didn't work in the past. So the point is that being very intentional with these questions, right? And people oftentimes say, well, I don't want to get too personal. Well, keep it on things such as style, situations that typically happen at work. And then what you'll find is that people will become more vulnerable. They will become more trustful. And as a result, the relationship deepens. And then it will make your coaching discussions about the job even easier.
Great.
Thank you.
We're going to go over here, and we're going to go with speed answers so we can get as many questions as possible. Go ahead.
One word answer. So my name's Danielle, and I work at GlaxoSmithKline, and I'm very proud to work there. And Lorenzo, I think you did an awesome job. I have a point and then a question. The one point I have is because we're talking about managing up and a bad manager and whatnot. I actually don't have that problem. My department, my manager, my VPs are amazing. So I wanted to also point out that if we want to give positive feedback too, to make the other maybe negative managers see that they're a better manager and follow their suit. So I think that's a big point to make sure that we're giving them the compliments they deserve when you have a good manager. My question is actually for a coworker of mine that I know doesn't. They have what I would consider a Monday morning quarterback manager. So it's not necessarily a negative person, but it's a, well, you should have done after the fact when they were requesting the feedback. So I'm not sure. I'm trying to get a little information to see what I can tell her.
Yeah. I would reframe. So being told you should have done this, when all along you've been asking for help is so frustrating. But I would reframe it as, okay, that boss is giving me feedback for the next time. So it may just be that the boss doesn't have the ability to give feedback in the moment, and it's not until he or she sees the results that they're able to see, oh, that's how I would have done it differently. So reframe it as, that's frustrating, I agree. Okay, let's put the frustration aside. Now I know what this person wants next time. So let me apply that. And you might, depending on her relationship with her boss, she might even say, you know what, this would be really helpful feedback. You know, if I had it a week ago, is there any way we could schedule a check-in or, you know, talk at the midpoint of the project and get this feedback more in time?
That's perfect.
Not, you know, a gentle way. You don't want to say, I hate your Monday morning feedback, right? But you could just say, could we do this at a different point?
Great, thanks. We're going to go with
Thank
the
you.
Middle.
Thank you.
Excellent.
I found in my experience that as leaders get to the top, they often end up managing teams they don't actually know or have the experience of working, like doing that actual work. And so how do you manage up to a leader that doesn't understand your program, doesn't understand your work, without having to write multiple memos that they're going to forget what you've told them?
So that's kind of a combo between the ghost and the incompetent or the inexperienced. Yeah. You kind of have to, first of all, accept that. Like, don't get bitter about it. It's going to cost you extra work. But part of, I think, your job is to teach them, right? And we often get frustrated. Like, I'm not getting paid to do their job. But that's kind of the choice we have, to find a way to teach them.
I would say it's a great opportunity to show your value early.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? So I've been in that scenario where I proactively said, well, this is a great opportunity. And I went to her on a one-off, and I said, listen, I recognize, I'm happy that you're on the team. If I could be a resource, given the tenure that I have on the team for you, then know that I'm here for you. And I would oftentimes shoot her things, just proactively, which then allowed her to say, okay, thank you, but then came to me more often, right? And it worked out well.
Yep. Got time for one more question, I think. Okay, great.
First, I want to thank you for all your contributions. They were very insightful. So we have a crop of young professionals that are coming up that are highly educated, highly ambitious, and very aggressive in the workplace. And these professionals, with little to no experience, come into a workplace with very, managers who have been there for longer, who are more conservative, and who believe more in what we call experience over education. So my question is, how would you handle, as a young professional, what we call the jealous boss, who sees your trajectory and is somewhat intimidated by your trajectory because, oh, well, I wasn't there at that age. And that kind of grinds your personal development. How would you manage that?
So this is a big problem. So I do a lot of work in the government, and we have my company was actually founded around helping with the millennial, baby boomer, Gen X divide in the workplace, how to like build those bridges. I would say we work with emerging professionals all the time. For them, it's a reframe. So they have to understand that they represent change, right? They have to understand what they represent on a meta level to their bosses. They have to realize that change is hard for people. And they also come into the workplace with skills that the older generation never had, the technology skill for one. And when they're coming in with valuable skills right from the start, I didn't have any valuable skill. Did you have any valuable skill when you started? I had nothing, right? I had to work. So there is going to be something going on. It's all about building that relationship. The young professional has to understand what their impact is on them, not their intention, but their impact. It's really about understanding their impact, understanding how to build a relationship, understanding how that baby boomer, that Gen Xer, is going to see that behavior, which is maybe it's just career passion, and the baby boomer Gen X is going to be like, oh, entitled. Oh, you know, not with authority. So it's really understanding. I could talk with more about this. It's really understanding the behavior and pulling it apart.
Thank you.
Great. So the questions have been phenomenal. I apologize. We have got to end this on time just so you can get to your next sessions. Let's once again give Lorenzo, Amy, and Mary a great round of applause. Really enjoyed this. Please remember, Mary is going to be doing a book signing at 12:30 in the exhibit hall, and Amy at immediately following this session. So please, lots of practical information, buy their books. Enjoy your afternoon and morning. Thank you.